we're going to be looking at now Daniel chapter 7, another part of it since we've been in it already. And I just want to thank you also for your prayer this morning, that asking that the Lord will lead our conversation. I truly want to know what God says, and so we're going to go through this chapter and just carefully, very slowly look at some of the concepts of what many today have called the Antichrist. And we will try to come to a conclusion. And of course, this doesn't cover everything the Bible says, because we're only looking at Daniel 7. There are other chapters in the Bible that deal with the Antichrist. You can see that in Daniel 8. You can see it in Daniel 11. You can see it in Revelation 13, Revelation 17, 2 Thessalonians 2, and some other chapters as well. So we're going to look at just this section and try to find what it is that the Bible is saying to Daniel as he is explaining this vision to us, and then also by an angel having the vision explained to him. So we're going to see a conversation continuing in Daniel chapter 7 between an angel and Daniel. We already know that the angel is the one that has been instructed in Daniel chapter 8 to reveal some truth or understanding to Daniel. And so we're going to see how he was doing that here in chapter 7. And that's when we're going to turn now to Daniel chapter 7. I, Daniel, this is the prophet that God had called. He was one of the captives from Judah. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit. Now, what is Daniel's spirit? That is his mind. I was grieved in my mind in the midst of my body. So even his body was affected by this grief. And the visions of my head, which is in his mind, troubled me. Okay, so he was really upset by these visions. And as we had read last time, it says, I came near unto one of them. It wasn't just the one. I came near unto one of them. So there was more than one that was there with Daniel. I came near to one of them that stood by and asked him the truth concerning all of this. And I highlighted the word truth for a purpose. So he, which is, we end up finding later it's an angel, he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. The word truth here is synonymous, or the same thing as, the word interpretation. Very important for the rest of the book of Daniel, because, like, for example, if you go in and study what the Bible says in Daniel 11, you find that the angel says, now I will declare unto you the truth. And so what Daniel is going through in chapter 11 is an explanation by the angel similar to what is happening here in Daniel chapter 7 and also continuing on in chapter 8. So we find that here Daniel wants to know the truth of what he's been shown. And the angel says, I will give you that interpretation. So the angel's job here is to interpret the dream of the four beasts that Daniel had seen in this chapter. Remember, there's... there's the lion, there's the bear, there's the leopard, and then there's this terrible beast that has iron teeth and he has horns, and then this little horn that comes up, and Daniel was wondering about that little horn that has eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. We had looked at that before, and there are some characteristics that we're going to rehash a little bit in this one, but we're going to continue on further as the angel explains not only the first time, but the second time to Daniel about this vision. So we're going to read now what the angel says about the first time the angel talks about the vision and the interpretation. And then Daniel's like, wait a minute, I want to know more. And so he asks questions, and then the angel gives a very more fully descriptive description of the vision that he was showing in Daniel chapter 7. So we're going to see that now. It says, like, I asked him the truth of all this, so he made known unto me the interpretation. Very important to understand. The truth is the interpretation in the book of Daniel here in these prophecies. The angel said unto Daniel, these great beasts, which are four kings. Okay, so the four beasts, which are four of them, they are four kings. Now we know later that he uses this same concept of king with the word kingdom. So the word king represents the kingdom. The reason why is, what is a kingdom without a king? And what is a king without a kingdom? Right? They would be nothing at all. And so you have this beast, representing a king or a kingdom. But there are four of them. So there are four great beasts, the lion, the bear, the leopard, and this terrible beast that represent four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. Okay, but then he goes on, the saints of the Most High, which are not kings or kingdoms, but just rather people that are willing to follow the commandments of God and honor him, the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom, which is not these kingdoms on the earth, but the kingdom which was given to Christ, we can see earlier in this chapter, and they will possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Now, what is that kingdom about? Well, we're going to go back just a couple of verses and read that in verse 13 and 14. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man. We already talked about this being Jesus. After his incarnation, that's why he's referred to, not like in Daniel 3, as the Son of God, but this is after the Son of God had been sent to the earth to take on flesh, and now he is the Son of Man, because this is the judgment scene that came way after his incarnation. So he's like the Son of Man. He came with the clouds of heaven, which were the angels we found out last time, and they came to the Ancient of Days, which is God the Father, and they, the angels, brought him, Christ, the Son of God, or Son of Man, near unto or before him, which was God. And there, in front of God, was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom. And that kingdom is what the saints will take, but that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed. And that's the kingdom that the saints will possess forever and ever, and even forever. And so that's not the kingdoms of this earth that the beasts are ruling over, that the saints will take over. No, absolutely not. We're looking for a greater kingdom. You know, the Bible says that we're looking for a city whose builder and maker is God. And how does God make that city? He does it through his Son. You can read about that in John chapter 14, verses 1 and 2. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. I go there to prepare a place for you. And if I come again, no, I'm sorry, if I told you that I'm coming again, and I will come again and take you to where I am. And so that's what Jesus was saying in John chapter 14. And he had just talked about his Father and he being the Son preparing those mansions. And so the builder and maker is God, which is the Father through his Son. That's what Hebrews 11 is telling us. And we can understand a little bit more as we can see here that this kingdom is being given over to the Son by the Father, and that Son is going to come over and take us from this earth back to where his Father is and where his kingdom is, and we're going to be there forever and ever. That's really what I believe is the most important part of this chapter, is that the saints, even though they go through the struggles and the what's called later the abomination of desolation scenario set up by this Antichrist system, they will receive the kingdom. And that's the first thing that the angel told. Yeah, the beast, there are four kingdoms, but then the saints possess the greater kingdom. And Daniel was like, okay, so the four beasts are kings, and then the saints are going to possess the kingdom. But he goes on, he's like, well, but what about the rest? Because that's all that the angel said in this first answer to the question. And we're going to go on now to what the angel says a little further in regard to Daniel's question. Said in verse 19, then I, Daniel, I would know the truth or the interpretation, as we had read about earlier in verse 16. I wanted to know the truth of the fourth beast. Oh, the fourth king, because we see that there are four beasts, right? And there are four kings. So the beast is the king, which later we read about as a kingdom. So I wanted to know the truth of the fourth beast, the king or the kingdom, which was different. So I'm going to highlight that word different. The fourth beast or kingdom was different from all the others that were before him. It was exceeding dreadful. I mean, this beast was really powerful. It had teeth of iron, and his nails were brass. And so now, wait a minute here. We've already learned in the previous image that was in chapter 2 that there were metals. One metal was iron, and the other metal was brass. Now, I'm going to just do a little bit with my hands here. There was the head of gold, there was the chest and arms of silver, there was the body and thighs of brass, and then there was the iron legs. And so the brass and the iron were right next to each other, and this fourth beast, kind of like the fourth metal, not gold, not silver, not brass, but iron, which was the exceeding terrible beast that Daniel had just seen in chapter 7, this beast right here, or this metal, was iron. And so this beast had iron teeth, but he had claws of brass. So he kind of attacked like a beast would. He attacked with his claws, kind of like how they did in the previous nation that was before them. And the reason why they did that, of course, is because history teaches lessons. Like if you go through an experience and you realize like, ooh, that was a bad thing to do, I should do that differently, then you will do it differently. But if you go through an experience in your past and you're like, wow, that was exactly what I need to do in the future, then you're gonna do that as well. So these iron teeth with the brazen claws is how this animal was doing its business, right? This kingdom was moving forward like the Romans, but also like the Grecians. And so you can see that the attacks were very similar, Grecian and Roman, as they were moving forward. So because we've already talked about this idea of the beast, the image of Daniel chapter 2 being Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Rome, interestingly, was during the time that Christ was here on the earth. And so these beasts are the same. And we found that out last time in Revelation 13. We saw some comparisons where Daniel was looking forward with the lion, the bear, the leopard, the terrible beast, whereas Rome, or Daniel, John, was in Rome, and because he was part of the terrible beast, he saw that it was made up of the leopard, the bear, and the lion, instead of the lion, the leopard, and the bear. The leopard, the bear, and the lion. I got that one mixed up. So you can see that Daniel is looking this way, and John is looking this way. And that's Daniel and Revelation, those two books there, where one is looking from history into the future, one is looking in the present to the past. And you can say in the present to the future as well, because he was in the kingdom of Babylon. But anyways, what we're seeing is, just like the image was Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece, you see that the beasts were Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. Did I say that wrong? Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. That's what I meant to say. So, excuse me, my mind is needing to be a little more clear on this. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. That's what's happening in the image and the beasts of Daniel 2 and 7. And so Daniel was wanting to know a little bit about this fourth beast, or this fourth metal, which was Rome. And he had iron teeth and claws of brass, or like the kingdom before him, which was Greece. And so we're learning a little bit more about how that Daniel 2 and 7 work together, and we're going to see some more as we continue learning about the second time the angel spoke with Daniel about these beasts, and how Daniel wanted to know a little bit more about that fourth beast. So we're going to go now and understand a little bit more. So now, this iron-teethed, brazen clawed animal or beast, he says he devoured and brake in pieces and stamped with the residue of his feet. And that's very similar to what happened in the image of Daniel chapter 2. If you wanted to go back and look there, you'll see that he stamped with his feet all the things that were going on. And so the feet here are mentioning again the iron that was dealt with there over in Daniel chapter 2. And it says, of the 10 horns. Now, so this kingdom had 10 horns. Remember, it's a beast. It's the fourth beast, which is a kingdom. And that fourth kingdom had 10 horns that were in his head. And of the other which came up. What was the other that came up? Well, the other that came up, if you want to slowly go and follow me up to verse 8, we're going to see that in verse 8, we had talked about this before. And it says there, I considered the horns, which of course were on this beast. So all the beasts which were before it, it was different because this fourth beast is what's being talked about. It had 10 horns, just like we're learning about in later, the verses later in Daniel chapter 7. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among those 10 horns another little horn. And so as we're reading later, there's this little horn that comes up among the other horns. So there is 11 horns in the totality here that we're talking about in verse 19 and 20. So of the 10 horns that were in his head, there came up the other horn that was with them, and before whom three fell. We read that also in verse 8. So there's 10 horns, there's another that comes up, and there are three horns that fell before this other little horn. Okay, so I'm going to focus on that other there, because there's 10 horns, another horn, and three fell by that other horn that came up amongst the 10 horns. Even of that horn that had eyes, which we learned about in verse 8, and a mouth that spake very great things, which we learned about in verse 8 as well, whose look was more stout than his fellows. Now he was looking stronger than all the other fellows before him. So here are some points that we're going to consider in Daniel chapter 7 about these beasts, right? There are four of them, and the fourth one, he wanted to know the difference, or what was it, what the fourth one was about. It was different than all the ones before it. It was really powerful, or it says here, stout. It was iron, so if we go back to Daniel chapter 2, it was Roman, but it was acting kind of like Greece as well, okay? It destroyed with the feet of it, or the iron part that it was referred to in Daniel chapter 2, and it had also 10 horns. Now, what are these horns? We need to... Daniel's still asking the question, but I just want to go over it again. Daniel's asking about the horns, and there's this other horn that comes up that plucks up three horns as it comes up. He had eyes, he had a mouth, and he was speaking very great things. We learned last time that the great things that were spoken were great things and blasphemies. We did that study and found out that in Mark chapter 2, a man tries to claim that he can forgive sin. That man was Jesus Christ, and by the power of his Father, he could. But the Pharisees didn't understand that. And so what they were doing is saying he was committing blasphemy. As a man claiming you can forgive sin. In John chapter 10, it talks about how there was a man, which the Pharisees saw Jesus as a man, claiming to be God. And Jesus clarified it, I'm not claiming to be God, I'm claiming to be the Son of God. But they thought he was claiming to be God. And so they were saying, you're committing blasphemy because as a man, you're claiming to be God. And so if a man claims to forgive sin and a man claims to be God, those are both blasphemous. But in Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 27, we learn also that if you are claiming to be a Christian, but you're breaking God's law, you are committing blasphemy, right? So let's put this all together. We have the fourth kingdom, who's a little different, and he has 10 horns. And in the midst of one of these, in the midst of these 10 horns comes up a little horn, and he's pretty powerful. He's stout, right? And he plucks up three as he comes up. And this little horn has man's understanding and a mouth speaking very great and blasphemous things. Now those blasphemous things are claiming to forgive sin, claiming to be God, and as followers of God, breaking God's law, right? So we kind of have a little bit of an understanding so far of just the clues that we're looking at in Daniel chapter 7 about who this might be, this little antichrist that we're talking about in verse 20. It says, I beheld, so Daniel is still explaining to the angel, I beheld, and the same horn, the one that came up right here and that plucked up three before it, right? The same horn made war with the saints. Okay, so that's why he was more stout than the others. Because it says right here, he was more stout than his fellows. Yeah, sure, his fellows did war on nations, but this one was more stout in that he made war with the saints in a way that was way beyond anybody else. And he prevailed against them, which would be the saints. So this little guy, this stout small horn, it's actually called the little horn over there in Daniel chapter 7, verse 8. This little horn came up among them, among the 10 horns. Now I'm going to show you that real quick because I want you to be able to see that in verse 8. I'm going to compare the two here. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them, which was the horns. So among, not next to, not away from, not a distance from, but among them, there came up another little horn. So he was little and he came up among them. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and focus on both of those there. So a little horn among the ten. Okay, so I'm going to go back over here to verse 20. And so this, the 10 horns are there, and this other one came up among those 10, and he was little, but he plucked up 3 as he came up. And he had a mouth speaking great things, and he was strong or stout. And his eyes, of course, were eyes of the man, but he was stout in that he made war against the saints and prevailed against them, unlike any of the others had done before. So now, he was watching this horn until, so there was this horn was going on until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given unto the saints of the Most High, which we read earlier in verse 13 and 14. And the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. So this little horn comes up among the ten. He's small, he's different than the others, he's diverse. And we can see he's more stout. He's got eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. He prevails against the saints until the Ancient of Days comes. So what's going on here? We're seeing all these characteristics of this little horn, because this little horn coming off of the big horn or the big beast is the Antichrist that's found in Revelation chapter 13. Now this one is from whence this little horn came. Because there's the beast and the ten horns, and then from this beast came up among those ten horns this Antichrist power, this little horn that would destroy the three and speak like a blasphemous man with man's understanding, and he would go until the Ancient of Days set up his judgment. So what is all this? Who fits into this scenario? Well, I'll tell you, there's more to this, because as we continue on with the angel explaining, in fact, I'm going to go further into what the angel explains. We're going to see that we can find some clues from what the angel explains to Daniel in regard to who this little Antichrist power is, this little horn. So we're going to go to it now and find out that after he continues, this little horn, after he continues until the Ancient of Days comes and judgment's given to the saints and the time comes that the saints possess the kingdom, thus said the angel. Now the angel's speaking again, because Daniel said, I said, thus he said. And so now the angel is rehashing the answer to the question that Daniel had just asked about that fourth beast and the little horn. The fourth beast, as Daniel had asked about, shall be the fourth, not king, but kingdom. Remember he said earlier, the four beasts are four kings. But here, the fourth beast is the fourth kingdom. So that's why I'm using the word kingdom and king together. Because what is a king without a kingdom? And what is a kingdom without a king? So the fourth beast is going to be the fourth kingdom upon the earth. And this kingdom is going to be different from all the kingdoms before it, of course, because it's going to be bigger and stronger, as we had seen, in that it was a terrible beast, right? And it shall devour the whole earth. So that fourth beast will be different in that it will devour the whole earth. That's not exactly why it was different, because it was different, rather the other beasts before it were also world ruling kingdoms, and you can see that from Daniel chapter 2. But this one was different in that it had some characteristics we'll learn about in just a moment that showed itself to be different. And this fourth kingdom shall tread it down, which is the earth, and break it into pieces. So this fourth kingdom actually did a strong work on the earth to make the earth worse than it had been before. Okay, so this, the influence of this fourth kingdom really made, left a bad history behind it. And so the whole earth was tread down and break into pieces as a result of its leadership, its rulership, its kingdom on the earth. Now, the ten horns that you saw and asked about, Daniel, it said the ten horns of this kingdom are ten kings. But we've noticed already that the word kingdom is synonymous with the word king. So the ten horns are 10 kings or 10 kingdoms that shall arise, okay? So first, there's this beast or this kingdom that will come up. It will rule the whole earth. And then there's 10 kingdoms that will come up afterwards. They shall arise. And remember, the 10 horns came up after that first beast that came. So just visually, if you are a visual person, you have this great, terrible beast that comes up. And then it says 10 horns arose from this beast. And then there's another little horn that comes up, plucking up three. So there's actually a chronological activity going on in this movie that Daniel had seen. He didn't just see a picture of a beast with 10 horns and one coming up, where three were flying from it. It was more like a video that Daniel was watching. There was this terrible beast, and there were 10 horns that came up, and there was this little horn that came up that plucked up three by the roots, and those little horns weren't there. So now there's eight horns. Let's see if I can do that. Eight horns altogether, because remember, there was 10. There was three plucked up, but another little horn that came up, right? And so you have this whole scenario of eight horns being there, and this eighth horn, or the little horn, was the one that Daniel was really interested in, because he was the one that had the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things, and he was doing all these things that were terrible against the saints. And so the angel continues explaining now a little bit further about this little horn. Let's see what happens as we go on here. It says in verse 24, the 10 horns of this king, of this kingdom, are 10 kings that shall arise. So the kingdom is there first, and then there's 10 horns, or kingdoms, and that shall arise, and another, which is that little horn, shall rise after them. Okay? So we're getting this chronology here. What, there's a kingdom, and then there's 10 kings, and then, which will arise later, and then there's another little horn that was going to rise after them. And he, as we talked about in verse 8, shall be different from the first, and shall subdue three kings. Okay, so we're kind of going over the same history again and again. One kingdom has 10 kingdoms that come up after that kingdom is already there. It shall arise. And then another kingdom will arise after the 10. And he's going to be different from all the kingdoms before him. And he's going to subdue three kings as he comes up. So this is a really interesting way of looking at history, in that you can see that all of these symbols refer to the kings and the kingdoms and the destroying of kingdoms and the rising up of kingdoms in history. And remember, this little horn that is different and that subdues three kings as he comes up, he is going to speak great words and blasphemies, remember? So these great words are what? Against the Most High. So now we see, as we've talked about before, that blasphemous words or great words are against the Most High. Now, who is the Most High? If you want to ask a demon who the Most High God is, which is the living God as well, as we had seen in the previous verse, it said, this demon cried out with a loud voice, and he said, what have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou son of what? The Most High God. So Jesus is the son of the Most High God, right? So the Father, according to the demons who were actually in heaven and knew the difference between the Son of God and the Most High God, they actually called Jesus the Son of the Most High God. So the demons knew that the angels that used to be in heaven that were cast out, they knew who the Most High God was. And so now going back over here to Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, he, that's this little horn, the one that subdues three and comes up after, he shall speak great words against the Most High, which is God the Father, claiming that he could forgive sins, it's not the Most High, claiming that he is God on earth, not the Most High, God in heaven, and claiming that he is the you know, follower of the Most High, but he's disobedient. Those are the blasphemous or great words that this little Antichrist horn is saying. And he shall wear out the saints of the Most High. That's why he's stout. Remember, he's very strong, very different. And one thing he will do is think to change times and laws. Now, I'm going to go to a book. It's actually written here in, I've just copied and pasted it. It's in the Fourth Spirit of Prophecy. It's page 279, the second paragraph. I'm going to read this paragraph with you. Notice something interesting about history. The papacy, which is the Roman Catholic Church, the papacy has attempted to change the law of God. It's the second commandment forbidding image worship has been dropped from the law, and the fourth commandment has been so changed as to authorize the observance of the first day instead of the seventh day as the Sabbath. But papists urge as a reason for omitting the second commandment that it is unnecessary being included in the first, and that they are giving the law exactly as God designed it should be understood, which is not, of course, true because they changed it. This cannot be the change foretold by the prophet, which is the second commandment. An intentional, deliberate change is brought to view. She quotes, the author quotes, "He shall think to change times and laws." The change in the fourth commandment exactly fulfills the prophecy. For this change, the only authority claimed is that of the church. Here, the papal power openly sets itself above God. Okay, like I said, Fourth Spirit of Prophecy, that's a pretty good book there. But what's being said here is this Antichrist power has thought to change times and laws, but history denotes that the papacy is the one, the Roman Catholic Church is the one that actually has changed the day from the Sabbath, the biblical Sabbath, over to the first day. So if the papacy is the one that changed the day, the times and laws that is spoken here of Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, if the papacy changed it, does the papacy also fit into some of the other attributes? Let's see. You've got Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. That's the terrible beast. Out of that terrible beast, there will come 10 horns, right? So, which are kingdoms. And we know that Rome, officially in 476, was starting in the 300s, but going to 476, was divided into 10 different kingdoms. So that's history. You can go and find the 10 divisions of Rome. And some of those were like the Franks and the Burgundians, the Heruli, the Suevi, and the Ostrogoths, and you know the Franks and the various nations that were brought up in that time, and there were 10 of them. Well, there was another little horn that came up while those 10 were in existence, and it actually came up among them. That little horn was the Antichrist speaking blasphemous terms and all these things, and he actually thought to change times and laws. It was the papal church. The papal church came up, and the Roman power gave all its authority to that papal church. And while that papal church came up, while the papacy came into existence, it actually destroyed three of those kingdoms. Now, why three of those kingdoms? The Heruli, the Ostrogoths, and the Vandals, those three, barbarian tribes, you've heard them called, but they were actually Aryan tribes. You can find in a book called the Book of Daniel and the Revelation, Thoughts on Daniel and the Revelation by Uriah Smith, page 144, 147 through 150, somewhere around there, the 140s through the 150. You can find a description of those three barbarian tribes, which were actually Aryan. What does that mean, they were Aryan? Well, they rejected the concept of the Trinity. Actually, in a book called Bible Readings for the Home Circle, the original one, you can find that also. I think it's on page 25 or 26, somewhere around there. You can find that it's described that the Aryan tribes are what caused them to be plucked up. They were Aryan. They were against the Trinity that the Catholic Church previously, it was an ecumenical movement in the Council of Nicaea, which was 325. It was 321 that the Sunday Law was established, but 325 was the Council of Nicaea, whereby the ecumenical group came together, which later came the Roman Catholic Church was there, and the priests and the bishops, they were doing what they could to diminish the Arian doctrine, which showed from the Bible that Jesus Christ was the only begotten Son of God. They didn't like that idea in the Council of Nicaea. They established Christ as the one that was actually part of God, and which later ended up being more like the eternal begetting. So like the bringing forth always happening, not that Jesus Christ was a separate entity, but that there is this three-in-one concept where they're all together and united, and it's three-in-one. So the continual begetting or the eternal begetting is something that was brought up in that idea of not co-substantial, but consubstantial. I'm maybe saying things that don't make sense to you, but if you've studied this, it makes sense that consubstantial is not what was accepted, but co-substantial was accepted by Arius and the Arians of that time. Well, they didn't like that idea with this Nicene Creed, and so they brought up this new idea that Christ was not co-substantial, but actually consubstantial, so part of God. And it led later into what we know today as the Trinity. Well, these three tribes, the Vandals, the Heruli, and the Ostrogoths, they were not Trinitarian. And as a result of this papal church coming up into existence, they literally destroyed those three nations because they didn't have the same faith. And that's why those Arian tribes were taken up and pulled out, rooted out. They were completely gone. And so that they would have now eight kings during that time. And that eighth king, the little horn, actually started ruling over the entire world. And that's what we're calling the Dark and Middle Ages in history, okay? So there was that Roman power that broke up into 10. And there was this papal system that came up and it plucked up three by the roots, making them now eight because it was that little horn. And he was given power. And it's interesting because during that time, well, 321 earlier, he had thought to change times and laws, okay? The Sunday was made honorable and the venerable day of the sun was honored in place of the biblical Sabbath. And that was in 321, just 4 years before the 325 Nicene Creed was established, whereby the Trinity was introduced to Christendom. And then there was wars in the Christian world as a result of that doctrine, and that's why the three were plucked up. And so you have a whole history about that right here in the Bible, dealing with this great words against the Most High. So what are these great words against the Most High? Well, obviously, it's a misunderstanding of who God is, claiming that man can forgive sin, claiming that man is God on earth, and also claiming that to be a Christian, you're breaking God's laws. Those things are blasphemous, but also the great words against the Most High specifically is confusing the very personality of God and his Son. And so I fully believe that in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, the great words against the Most High is specifically referring to the Trinitarian doctrine that was coming up during the time this little horn was plucking up three by the roots and ruling and speaking and changing God's law, right? So all of this works together where we can see that the papal church came out of Rome in the midst of the 10 kingdoms, destroyed three as a result of them being non-Trinitarian, and established those great words against the Most High as it's coming up while it's changing God's law from Sabbath to Sunday. All of this is fitting perfectly with the history of the Roman Catholic Church. And so when you go and look into that history and you find some of those things fitting all together, you realize like, wow, the Roman Church is small and it's different because it's not only a king leader, but it's a king pope leader. It's actually civil and religious at the same time. And you can find that in 538, it's actually 508, but 508 to 538, there was this establishment of the papal system being not only civil but religious and ruling over the entire world. So it was different. It was little. It came up out of the main beast, out of the 10 horns, among them plucked up three, changed times and laws, and spoke great words against the Most High. The papal system fits this in its entirety. But it goes on even further. Watch what happens in the Bible. It says, they, which is the saints, they shall be given into his hand until. So all the way until. Now, wait a minute. We've seen that word until before. We saw it up here where it says until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given. Now, if you know when the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, which was in the 1844 era, according to the prophecy of Daniel chapter 8, then you know that until the Ancient of Days came, which was like around the 1800s, 1844-ish, well, we're going to see this word again here in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. It says, they were given into his hand until a time, times, and a dividing of time. Now, what is this? And what is this until word? Well, above, it's until the Ancient of Days takes a seat on the throne and is ruling or judging, right? Giving the kingdom to his son. But then we also see a time, times, and a dividing of time. Well, a time, according to Daniel chapter 5, as we've read before, is actually a year. And a year is made up of 360. So times is plural, which is time twice. So you have 360 twice, which is 720. So 360 plus 720, which is the amount of days in a year. So if you have 1 year and then 2 years, we actually have 1 plus 2 is 3. And then a half a year, which is 180, a dividing of time. So you have 360, 720, and 180 equaling 1260 years or days. A day is a year in Bible prophecy. You can find that all through Bible study and students and, you know, Bible commentaries and books and everything. People have concluded, except, of course, for those that are preterists or futurists, but historians have concluded in their study that a day for a year is how you understand Bible prophecy, right? So you have a time, times, and a half a time. So 1, 2, 3 and a half times, which is years. So that's equaling 1260, do the math for yourself, 360 plus 720 plus 180 equals 1260. You have 1260 days or years in this prophecy. And so this little horn would come up from Rome after the 10 divisions of Rome. It would come up among the 10 divisions of Rome. It would pluck up three of those kingdoms because of these great words against the Most High, which is Trinitarianism, and because they were non-Trinitarian, they were plucked up, and they would change the Sabbath during the time that they were coming up and destroying those three nations. And so you have all of this fitting in, but how long is this 1260 years? Well, from 538, when they were actually given official leadership of the world, both in civil and religious regards, in 538, that little horn, the papal system, ruled from 538 to 1798, when the French general Berthier came and was able to take the Pope captive, and that's when the papal system lost both the civil, mostly the civil, and religious authority. The religious authority wasn't taken away completely. The religious authority was actually reinstated just a short time after the Pope had died in exile. And so the civil authority is what was taken away. The civil authority was starting to come back in 1929, but it wasn't completely healed. That deadly wound that it talks about in Revelation 13 wasn't completely healed, and it won't be completely healed until civil authority is given back again as it had been previously in the former years of its reign. And so that's where the deadly wound comes in, and the healing of the deadly wound. It hasn't healed yet. It's in the making, and it's actually not too far away from being healed. So you have 1260, exactly 1260 years from 538 to 1798, where the papal system ruled in both civil and religious authority. And so what you have is all of the biblical characteristics of Daniel chapter 7 with this little horn fitting into the scenario of the papal church. Not only does it come out of Rome and among the 10 horns of the 10 kingdoms that Rome was divided into, it comes up among them, plucks up three by the roots, says blasphemous and great words against the Most High, which is Trinitarianism. It changes the Sabbath to Sunday, and it rules for 1260 years. This is incredible history foretold by Daniel, given, of course, by God through the angel, through the mediation of his son. And so you have this whole scenario spelled out here in Daniel chapter 7, verses 19 through 25, the explanation and questions of Daniel and the explanation of the angel. And so what we're seeing here is that the people of God would be given into his hand until a time, times, and a dividing of time, that 1260 years that we've discussed before. But even though this little horn will take over and will destroy God's people, wear them out for 1260 years, but the judgment shall sit after that, right? Until this 1260 years, and then the judgment shall sit, which is after this 1260 years, ending in 1798. And the judgment sitting is in 1844, fitting exactly the same chronology that we've talked about earlier. And they shall take away his dominion, which is the dominion of this little horn, to consume and destroy that dominion until the end. So that the dominion of this little horn will be taken away. It will be consumed and destroyed unto the end, which is, of course, when Jesus Christ comes. And the kingdom, which is the, not the kingdoms of the earth, but the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, because it says the meek shall inherit the earth, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions and shall serve and obey him, which is the leader of that kingdom, Christ, and of course, in submission to his Father. You can see that in 1 Corinthians 15. Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. And that's the end of chapter 7. But what we're seeing here is that God had revealed to Daniel in symbols and types, which the angel explained in great detail, that there's this beast, which is the fourth kingdom. And there's going to be 10 kings that come up from that kingdom. So there's 10 divisions in Rome. And there's this little kingdom that comes up. It destroys the saints. It plucks up three kings or kingdoms while it comes up. It comes up in Rome, of course, because it came out of the great last fourth beast. And so coming up out of Rome amidst the 10 divisions, plucking up three because they were non-Trinitarian, he spoke great words against the Most High. He was Trinitarian. And he changes the law at that same time as he's coming up destroying those three horns. He wears out the saints. He exists and rules for 1260 years. But the good news is he will not always have power. At the end of that 1260 years, his power, his civil power mainly, is wiped out. And then that's when God sets up the judgment in 1844 and onward. And the power of this little horn will be diminishing until finally the end, where his deadly wound is healed, according to Revelation 13. And this whole scenario, like was in the Dark and Middle Ages, is played out again, which we can rightfully call the abomination of desolation. So everything that happened in the past, I'm telling you, according to the Bible and prophecy, will play out again. It will play out still in our future, except it's not Rome with the Catholic system being given leadership and authority. It will be another one, as you've seen in Revelation chapter 13. I can put up the link, if you're interested, just ask me for it. Revelation 13 with Revelation with Daniel. You can go and find that there's three messages on Revelation 13. And you will find that it is pretty clear that the papacy, still after it receives power, the civil power, will be from America, not Rome necessarily. And so the papacy and America will do their thing, like what happened in the Dark and Middle Ages. And that's where the abomination of desolation will be set up again. That's the deadly wound that will be healed. And all of what we saw in the experience of the great words and the destruction of the saints of the Most High, etc., all of that's going to be played out again. It will not be very pretty for God's people in the future. But all of that doesn't matter, because the saints will receive the kingdom that will never, ever fail. God the Father with his Son will be sitting on the throne, as you can read in Revelation chapter 3 at the end, and we, those that overcome, will be sitting with them. And we can understand that we will be able to walk with the Father, the Son, the holy angels, and the redeemed of all ages throughout the ceaseless ages of eternity. So now, right now, let's be faithful to the God of the Bible that has taught us the truth in his word. We can keep his commandments, have the faith of his Son. We can honor him through sharing the truths that we know from his word with those that don't know. And we can have our hearts renewed every single day by the Word of God, which is described in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 23. We can be born again by the Word of God, which abides forever. This is what I want my experience to be, and I want this to be yours as well. Let's commit ourselves to the God of the Bible, surrendering ourselves to Him and His will, instead of walking with the world and the things that are common to the ecumenical movement that the Antichrist has set up. Let's bow our heads and pray for His blessings. Our Father in heaven, I ask that You would please continue to lead and guide us. Thank You for giving us this time where we could study. I pray that the words that were spoken, though in some cases I was not as clear of thought as I wish I could be, I pray that everything would come and would come to the ears of Your people in clear and true tones. We thank You for giving us this time and pray Your blessings in all things, asking for the transformed hearts that we talked about toward the end of the message, praying that You would use us in great ways, glorifying Yourself and bringing clarity to the mind of Your people so that we can know and understand what it is that You're saying to Your people. Thank You for this, and bless us, we pray, in Jesus' holy name. Amen.